Well, hey guys, it's Larry from the Bits of Time podcast. You're not hearing Michael because I'm doing a solo episode, so this should be interesting. Now, here at Bits of Time, we absolutely are all about whether or not a game is worth your time. And I have to be honest with you, one of the two controversies surrounding this game has to do about time and whether it is worth it for you. And at a measly $15, it's an absolute steal. The problem is it steals your time. It's so damn addicting. I really do foresee a future where I have to just uninstall this game because I can't get anything else done and I have so much that I still need to play. And then there's the game name itself. I don't know if it's Balatro. I'm not really sure. I will probably call it all three at some point during this episode, but it's the card game that is a roguelike that starts with a B that you've seen everywhere. Well, maybe not everywhere, but it did sell a million copies. So what do you need to know about this game? Officially, it is a poker-themed roguelite deck builder. If you know how to play poker, then you're good to go. You don't need any other help. If you don't, that's what YouTube's for. There's a million different videos out there. Go watch it. You start with a deck of 52 cards, just like we do in real life, and you play an ante. In order to quote unquote beat the game, you got to get through 8 antes. Each ante has a small blind, a big blind, and then a boss. Yes, you heard that right. In this poker game, you will be fighting a boss of sorts. Anyways, the way that you're going to start out playing the game is you're going to start off with a small blind, has about 300 chips that you need to score. So you've got three hands to try and get up to 300 chips. And the cards themselves are worth what their actual numbered value is. So a two is worth two chips, a three chips, you get the idea. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that even if you had 10 hands, you're not getting to 300 chips if you're just playing high card early on in the game. Spoiler alert, you can actually create a deck that does make high cards score insane amount of points. That's how crazy the game eventually can get. So at the base level, the way the deck hands work is if you get two pair, three of a kind, straight flush, royal flush, they all have higher multipliers the higher you go up. So if you do a flush, it's 40 chips times four. That is the base level value. But then it adds in what type of cards you used. So obviously it behooves you to have a higher level flush of aces and kings than it would be to have a flush of threes and twos. Does that make sense? At the end of the small blind, you gain a little bit of gold and then are presented with a shop where you have multiple different options here. As to not bore you to death diving into every little detail here, the big thing here is you can buy these things called Joker cards. To put it simply, these are what will help you pilot your deck in one direction over the other. The base game, there are five Joker cards that you can have access to at any one time, and they are always active as long as they hit whatever their requirement is. And being that there are 150 jokers in this game, the possibilities are insane. And those requirements literally can be almost anything. I mean, you're talking about whether or not if you play a heart card, you're going to get more points. If you're going to play a straight, you could get more points. But I believe where the game gets really clever is the naming of the jokers. So for instance, there is a joker that if you've played six times, you get a times four multiplier on the sixth play. And that joker is aptly named loyalty card. Another one, the card is actually visibly ripped in half, and it states that if you play three or less cards in your hand, you get this type of bonus. And I mean, they even have a credit card for when you hit zero, you can actually go in debt by $20 in order to play as long as you have this joker in hand. And it's this way with every single one of the jokers. They clearly had a lot of fun getting clever with the names of the jokers in this game and what the jokers do. And by the way that you organize the jokers actually matters with both their abilities and how they score. So eventually you'll actually be switching up the jokers' locations per hand you play just to get specific benefits. To add even more complexity, there are tarot cards. Tarot cards do anything from literally straight up just deleting cards from your deck to adding multiples of cards to your deck to changing the suits. They can just make you gain money, and the money can come in different forms. It could be a lucky tag, which could mean you get a 1 in 20 shot of getting 20 gold or a plus 20 multiplier attached, which then you can add a red stamp to, which means that card gets played twice, which means the 1 in 20 gets to roll twice. Can you feel the addiction here? You can even make cards glass or steel. Steel being one of my favorite because a steel card, if it remains in your hand but not played, gives you a 1.5 times multiplier to your score, while glass cards have a 1 in 4 shot of breaking, but have a times 2 multiplier. Now, I have a lot more notes taken here, and I just wanted to take a moment to stop and say, I think you can already see how complicated this game can get. I've currently played the game for 35 hours, and I have never had a single run play out exactly like another. And I haven't even talked about skipping blinds or voucher tags or negative jokers or the celestial cards that allow you to boost the multipliers that are attached to certain types of hands. And then add all of that to bosses that might have debuffs of a boss that every time you play a hand, you actually lose a level of the hand. Or every time you play cards, you lose money. There are just so many different things that can happen in each run as you plot it out. And if you plot one out well, you hopefully can get to ante 8 of 8 and beat the boss. When you do this, this officially is the first part of beating the game. And doing this will mean that you unlock another deck. Another deck might have, hey, this one, you don't earn interest on your money at the end of each round, or your hand size is one larger, or maybe you have one extra discard, or maybe a certain deck doesn't have any face cards in it, it's just numbered cards. There's a ton of different ones, and there's even ones that change up the scoring system for yourself. As you unlock and play with all these different deck types, you unlock more and more stuff. The fun part is, there's also difficulty levels in this game. The difficulty levels are called stakes, starting off default as the white stake. And they slowly get more and more difficult, going from red to green to black to blue, all the way down to golden. By the way, it's stake, S-T-A-K-E, not S-T-E-A-K. Okay, calm down. As I said, the white stake is your base difficulty level. Moving up to the red stake means your small blind no longer has you gaining money for beating it. If you wanted to jump up to the green stake, you actually not only no longer get money from that for a small blind, but now the score required increases each ante. And so the fun part about the difficulty levels in this game, not only when you upgrade the difficulty level, do you maintain all the negatives that were applied at the previous difficulty levels, but you gain a new one. And then because I keep saying it, when I say beat the game at ante 8, that's beating the game, but then you have endless mode, which that's where the true fun begins in this one. I believe the highest that I've ever scored in this game so far is ante 12, and I think I got myself like 80 million chips score or something like that. But to give you an idea, the higher levels, the highest of highest, you're talking about numbers that have an E in it. For those of you who did not pay attention to math class, these are called irrational numbers. To put it simply, the score required is absolutely astronomical. And as I'm recording this, I'm actually not even sure how I'm supposed to get past ante 12 because the jump and the number required in chips is so insane that I find myself just trying to theory craft how in the world I'm gonna get that high. For those who have played the DNA and Blueprint Joker cards, I think are some of the answers. And see, for me at least, in order to even start getting to that point, there's really three different levels of how you build decks in this game and why I have so much fun playing it. At the base level of the game, you need to figure out how to get a good Joker to build a deck around. So that means a Joker that is going to allow you to score more points quickly without having to get obscenely impossible hands. One of my go-to defaults is looking for Jokers that boost flushes. You need an economy, so you need a Joker or some way to get yourself money so that you constantly are able to use that money to buy things in the shop. And then eventually you need a Joker that is taking all these multiple chip sets that you're getting and you need to multiply those by this Joker. That's where the really big numbers start kicking in. Now here's the thing, I'm going to stop explaining how to play the game at this point because I can already hear the exhaustion in myself at how hard it is just to describe this game at a base level. It is, I swear, simple. As in, if you understand or know how to play poker, you can play this game. And just a few things real quick about why I love this game so much. It is super easy to pick up and play. There are so few screens. It's just simple. Everything is right at the ready if you need it. And honestly, if you're not feeling a run, you can just hit new run and be back up playing a brand new run within seconds. I kind of feel like Todd Howard's It Just Works applies to this game perfectly. And that is basically Balatro in a nutshell. It is short, it is sweet, and holy crap is it addictive. So if you've made it this far, I would love for you to let me know what is your favorite Joker in this game? What's your favorite tarot card? I mean, my goodness, I'm just realizing we didn't even talk about spectral cards, which are a whole nother thing. Do you have a certain type of deck that you tend to always try and build? Do you have a favorite custom deck that they have in the game? I'd love to know all these different things. And I also just wanted to give a quick shout out to my brother, Michael. We are very quickly coming upon our 2-year anniversary on this podcast as of April 1st. I couldn't have done this without you, brother. I love you, and I'm looking forward to starting the next season with you. And I'm hoping that this episode helped convince you to play Balatro, or Balatro, or whatever. It's the poker game. Go play it.